All right, how's everybody doing? Hopefully everybody's having a great day. Obviously, our intro music is like, it picks up, you get to see me apparently for like 2 seconds, and then it goes into the video. So I've got to work on that. I don't know why it's doing that, but you know, as I always preface the show, I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com. Welcome to Chicago Music Revealed. I am also the program and entertainment director at the Epiphany Center for the Arts, opening up very soon. We're actually opening September 1st. Fingers crossed. We will have more information coming about that. You can get all the information at epiphanyshy.com. We're going to have a great slate of live music happening hopefully every single night of the week starting in September. So stick around. But as I always tell everyone, I am running the board here. I am all by myself. Everybody is quarantined, self-distancing. So I do not have a staff here helping me out on this. So as there are technical problems, you get to look at me for 2 seconds before the video starts. But hey, I digress. All right. This is an exciting show. I am happy to be able to preview, not even preview. We're going to be talking about the new issue of Chicago Jazz Magazine. It's up online now, chicagojazzmagazine.com. There is a ton of great content up there, even though we held off and we're not doing any feature interviews right now because of our social distancing. I can't get in front of anybody with anybody and do an interview right now. We've got some incredible content. Jeff Cebulski is still contributing. We love Jeff. Thank you very much. Sabina Lilly, our content editor, is helping to coordinate everything and put everything together. Christine Jeffers, the great photographer of Chicago Jazz Magazine. She's got a F-stop kind of looking back at some past festivals, so you want to check that out. All of that's up on Chicago Jazz Magazine. But then also this gentleman who we had on last month, where we learned all about his background, his incredible background, and his how he came to love jazz and why he loves jazz and why he's contributing to Chicago Jazz Magazine. Harair Attarian, Dr. Harair Attarian is on. I'm going to bring him up right now. There he is. Harair, how are you?
I'm doing well.
We're able to actually do Skype today rather than what we had to do last time, where we had to resort to the phone. So it's a pleasure having you virtually on the show today. And
thank you.
You were very busy this month for Chicago Jazz Magazine, I have to say. You've got 4 reviews. And then you did one of your other columns, which is Music in the Brain. And this is a fascinating one, and it deals with autism and music. And I want to delve into talking about that, but let's do that secondary, because you know that we're going to be talking about that in depth, and that's going to take a lot of time. But I want to make sure that we touch on some of these incredible releases. You know, I don't know how you feel, but I'm excited that in the music industry, there's still people releasing recordings, releasing albums, putting it out, even though they might have recorded these, you know, a year and a half ago or a year ago, they're sticking with their promo plan. They're pushing things out. They're putting everything together. And we're able to review them. We're able to give some of these musicians who are not playing any gigs anymore right now or doing any festivals or any of that stuff, we're able to give them some love and put their work on display here. So you've got 4 reviews, but I mean, I don't know. How do you feel about it? I mean, I think this is a great time for people to be releasing music right now because you have a captive audience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, if it goes much longer, I don't know, you know, but for now, I'm sure people haven't released. And I think this is the best time to do it.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Right. So everything's getting out. We're happy to be able to shine a light on some of this stuff and put a spotlight on some of this. So let's talk about this. Why don't we kick it off? Threadbare, the group Threadbare, has a brand new release, and Silver Dollar. And talk a little bit about this recording. What'd you think?
I think it's a very captivating and interesting recording because it goes organic flow between the trio and the I think they're a trio, right?
Yep, trio. Yep.
Yeah.
Jason Stein, Ben Cruz.
So and then they bring it sort of bring in influences and very typical of the newer Chicago freer improv music. It's a very strong melodic sense as well as free improvisation, and there's a welcome disregard to genreism. So there's different, like you hear a little bit of Americana, folkish influences, and you hear some rock. So it's very, very interesting.
So the trio is Jason Stein, Ben Cruz, and Emerson Hunton. And, you know, these guys are on that improvised, that Chicago improvisational scene. You know, that I think it's not necessarily free jazz, although some people call it free jazz. I like to call it the improvisational, you know, Chicago improvisational scene. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some of they're like some of the main guys on that. So hearing them all together on this, it's interesting to me, especially when you're listening to something, a recording like this or any sort of music like this. It's always interesting because I like to listen to the themes and how they develop inside of all of the back and forth and all of the interplay in the group. I mean, what did you get out of that when you were listening to it?
I think that what I liked about it the most was, or stood out to me the most, was the way the ideas flow from one to the other, and then how they develop into a more collective idea, rather than, you know, somebody playing the theme, soloing, and then they're playing the theme again and then soloing. So that kind of fluid exchanges that not only made the pieces unique, but it also was essential for the development of the piece as they were playing it.
Yeah. Well, and that's sometimes a very difficult thing for, you know, the improvisational music to have happen. So when you get to the level where you can actually do that on a consistent basis and actually have people and captivate people's ears, you know, it's also one thing to hear things live and then another thing to hear it on a recording for this type of music. And I prefer to see it live, but on this type of recording, it seems like it really caught your ear and it was able to suck you in. So we're basically saying it's something that the people should definitely check out.
Yeah.
All right. So next one, Sam Robinson. He was on our show actually about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. And I think this is his first recording actually under his own name. So what'd you think about this?
It was very enjoyable recording. It had this feel of the jam session.
Mm-hmm.
And then it felt to me like a modernized version of those 50s Blue Note records of, you know, like when people got together and had the quote unquote blowing sessions and jammed, and it was all of the pieces were like standards that he and his band jammed on, it was very like it's exciting and constantly novel ideas come up in their solos, and while at the same time remaining within that standard structure,
right.
So solidly in the mainstream. The only thing that I found a little bit disappointing is that he has no internet presence.
Yes, I agree.
It took me forever to find a little bit of information about him, and it turned out that he has a PhD in French and teaches French at I don't know whether it's a public or a private high school.
Well, you must have had to do a deep dive because I didn't find any of that when I was looking it up. So that was good investigative work there.
Yeah.
All right. So, but if people like a classic album, a classic album, they want to hear some blowing. They like trumpet. They like that trumpet sound with rhythm section behind it. This is a recording that people should check out.
Definitely. And it gives you something new, you know, something more 21st century, add something more 21st century to it.
Perfect. Okay. Next one. Well, we'll crank through these a little bit here. Ivo Perlman and Matthew Shipp.
Yeah.
Amal, you say the word. What is it? Amalgam?
Amalgam.
Yeah, amalgam.
Amalgam,
okay.
Yeah.
Amalgam. See,
So Matthew Shipp and Ivo Perlman. Ivo Perlman is a Brazilian saxophonist, yeah. And Matthew Shipp is, you know, from the U.S., a pianist. They've played together on, I asked Ivo, I think he said close to 18, 19 albums.
Oh, really?
And about a handful of these are just duets, that's two of them together. I reviewed their previous release that was a live session several months back. Any case, so they have, very good synergy with one another, having for so long. And on the solo, on the duets, they are purely improvised and back and forth. And what was unique about this versus, let's say, the one previously that was a live recording from Germany, there was a lot of melancholic lyricism, even though it was completely freely improvised.
Okay. That's not easy to do. But that makes it interesting, right? I mean, that makes it super. Were you sort of shocked at what this sounded like for the two of them? I mean, it's a little bit different than what I would have thought it would have been, right?
Yeah, especially having delved deep into the previous recording that was a live recording from Germany. I was really surprised and impressed by the amount of lyricism they had put in and the more contemplative nature of their, let's say, conversations.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so this is definitely something people should check out.
Yeah.
And the last one, Robert Magris, Sweet. And I know Roberto Magris. And I know he's somebody that I think I got connected with him through Rusty Jones many, many years ago when Rusty was still with us. And Roberto's constantly putting out recordings and touring, actually, when you can actually tour, because he comes through Chicago as well. I know he's over in Europe, right? So, I mean, what?
Yeah, he's in Italy.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about this recording and how it's... it seems pretty interesting just reading your review. I haven't heard it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually a double album recording with quite a few compositions by him. And I think that what is striking about him as a musician is not only how prolific he is in recording, but he also composes these pieces, and no two are alike. They are each unique, yeah. Yet he is able, you know, and yet to turn them, to produce them with such, so fast and high quality. And I think that this was, this suite is more of his big project, the longest of his recordings, and it has a very cinematic feel to the different pieces.
So it seems like something that sounds like it's a little different than what he normally puts out, because I know from listening to some of his past work, what you're describing sounds pretty different than what he did, but it seems to work with his style, right?
Oh, yes. It's very sophisticated, yet accessible. It's not, pretentious, but it's very sophisticated. It's very accessible, but not mundane.
Mm-hmm.
And he as a composer is a very, I don't know him, but sounds from his pieces, sounds like he's an interesting composer.
Yeah.
Has interesting ideas.
All right, so definitely Roberto Magris, they need to check out. And, of course, all the reviews are up on ChicagoJazzMagazine.com. So check all of them out. You can read them. And then I would encourage everyone, if you really want to support the artists, especially during this time, during the pandemic, when nobody is working, the best way to support them is to go buy it, whether it's digital or if you can find it on a hard copy or an album, if some of them have it available. Any sort of merch you can buy from artists these days, no matter who they are, but especially these four that that we just talked about, it would be, you know, really helpful, let's just say. And, you know, you'd be supporting a great cause. And, you know, continuing to put stuff out in a pandemic takes a lot. So I my hat's off to all these artists that are putting stuff out. And I know we're going to have another four reviews coming in for July and continuing on. So it's great to see the creativity still happening, even with the quarantine and the lockdown and everything. So, Harire, you have been doing the Music in the Brain column. And every other month, because you're a neurologist, and you know, I remember us talking about this the last time you were on, and we were talking a little bit about it. And I find it fascinating how music affects people's brains, specifically, right? Their minds, the way they think, the way their moods, the way they operate, functionality. But this one specifically, boy, this Music in the Brain is really, really. I think it's really something that's very important. And I think that's something, I don't know, and you can talk to this, how many places are thinking of autism and music in this way, but the way you laid it out in this column is really fascinating. So why don't you talk a little bit? I mean, you kicked it off. You talked about Blind Tom Wiggins and started from there. And then you really laid it out. And it was fascinating to me how you did it, because I know a lot of people have done music therapy classes or have worked with special needs people with music and have connected with them outside of any other level that anybody else, even linguists and things, were trying to do. So talk a little bit about the article. Let's start right at the top. Blind Tom Wiggins and take it from there.
Yeah. So Blind Tom Wiggins, for those who don't know, was a musical phenomenon who was born a slave. He was blind, and he was he didn't speak. He obviously could hear, and some of the behaviors that have been described in his contemporaries watching him, at the time there was nobody knew about autism, but sounds like had autism. But he was a musical phenomenon. He played by ear any piece. He composed pieces in the style of the time. And after emancipation, unfortunately, his previous masters became his quote-unquote managers and, you know, exploited the situation. He even played in the White House. And he's buried in some unmarked grave in Brooklyn.
Wow. Huh.
So I was reading the liner notes with the recording of his piece, and somebody had mentioned in the liner notes that you know, autism cannot really having autism means that he couldn't have been really artistically creative because it interfered with creativity, which is obviously not true. Granted, that article was written decades ago, and we know new things now. But music creativity is in a lot of autistic people is more enhanced. Perhaps the theory being that because they are unable to produce language, playing music is form of a language, because it involves, as I've written in previous columns, it involves similar areas to language. There have been a little bit attempts at music therapy with autistic children. Unfortunately, not as much as in other fields. Definitely there are several musicians, brilliant musicians, and even a philosopher who's written a book who have been, you know, profoundly autistic. So And I thought that those musicians' ability to express themselves in music was a way out of their inability or their disabilities with language production. So it's a freeing sense for them.
Talk a little bit about autism, just being on the spectrum, because the spectrum, it's so wide ranging. I mean, there's people that are I don't know if you'd call it, this is not the technical term, but just mm-hmm. slightly autistic, and then there's people that are
very
autistic, right? And I mean that whole spectrum. Yeah. But I mean, I've done work with the Autism Society of Illinois, a couple of fundraisers, years ago, and I was mm-hmm. around a lot of autistic therapists, and then around a lot of autistic kids, and it was interesting to me. I mean, some hated loud noises, some hated this, some hated that. But then others loved music. Others, it connected with them on some other level mm-hmm. where they might not be, able to function in normal society. But when they hear music, it calmed them more than anything yes. else and settled them in. I mean, how many studies have been done dealing with music and autism and why it affects different autistic people differently? Do they even know at this point?
They don't. There's very few studies done with music in autism, yet there certainly is a spectrum of autism. Some people just on the very milder end are usually labeled quirky. Okay. They have their own way of doing things. Growing up, my sister had a close friend who in hindsight was probably on the autistic spectrum. Everybody said that he was a quirky kid, and he was a virtuoso violinist at like age 8 or 9. But he had, everything had to be in a certain way. He obviously could speak and have some social interactions. On the other hand, you have the profoundly autistic who have a problem with language production, language in our sense of language, but they can do music, they use visual aids to communicate and so forth. So language is not only words,
I thought it was interesting too, because in the article you talk about it, and like I said, I mean, you lay it out well, and everybody should go and read this. It's on chicagojazzmagazine.com, Music in the Brain, and it's in the latest issue right there on the homepage. I liked how you brought up the fact and you related it back to jazz and also with the autistic side of it. Like, back when Blind Tom Wiggins was around, they didn't know what autism was. But now looking at mm-hmm. it 100 years later, most people would say he was autistic. And, this is mm-hmm. this is why, because of this is what we're hearing and seeing and how, researching his life. But then you related it back to jazz where, some people didn't like jazz a certain way, or they thought Miles mm-hmm. Davis sold out when he went to electric. Mm-hmm. And now they listen back to it now and think that it's genius stuff. So it's
exactly.
It's interesting how, time evolves. The thing I find interesting with the autistic studies is how quickly things continuously change, especially now. Mm-hmm. I mean, like in the past
yes.
10, 15 years, things have drastically changed from people not really understanding autism to people understanding there's a wide spectrum of autism and how certain mm-hmm. people are affected by certain things. And some treatments are coming out, not many, but some treatments are starting to help.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are you seeing as a neurologist? I mean, as far as how music affects, like somebody who's at 8 years old, he's on the spectrum and he's a genius violinist, right? Or some of these mm-hmm, jazz mm-hmm. musicians like Glenn Gould that you mentioned in the article. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's an expert on Johann Sebastian Bach canons, or like Matt Savage, jazz piano phenom. They're on the spectrum. But mm-hmm. then I see other people that are on the spectrum and they can't function in certain ways, or they don't have the attention to even
yeah.
be able to do things. Is there any ideas why some people take to music when they're on the spectrum, or why not?
So, I mean, the bottom line is that just because somebody's autistic, it doesn't mean that they're going to be musically gifted.
Mm-hmm.
But of them who are musically gifted, they're really phenomenal. And the thing is that we cannot say, like it was said 20 years ago, the person who wrote that article, that just because they're autistic and they don't have the language abilities, that they cannot be creative.
Yeah, that was your point in that too when you were talking about that, because you're right, because John Davis is the guy that wrote those liner notes and did that Blind Tom Wiggins tribute. Mm-hmm. And they used to call Blind Tom Wiggins the eighth wonder of the world. I never knew that. That's pretty fascinating too. Yeah. So I mean, you know, he had quite an impact, even being a former slave and being in that century, which is amazing to me. Why is it though? I mean, talk a little bit, because I'm going to pick your brain as a neurologist here too. Mm-hmm. I mean, why? Mm-hmm. How much musical therapy is happening these days? And do you feel like, as a neurologist, there should be more emphasis on music therapy in schools and music therapy, you know, and training people to become music therapists? Because it would help people. Talk a little bit about that from your neurology standpoint.
So definitely newer studies, and maybe I've even mentioned that in a previous column, that numerous studies have shown that exposure to music, especially trying to teach somebody to play music, definitely improves the child's ability, scholastic abilities. And we know that for a fact, that time and time again, the two elements that lifestyle elements that lower the risk of dementia are being physically active and playing a musical instrument.
Wow. That's
so.
Why aren't we hearing more about that? Like every single day, you would think that people should be hearing that constantly. You know, I mean, that
I know
that's like a no brainer right there, right?
Yeah.
No pun intended, but
and yes. There is definitely music. There's definitely studies being done in music therapy and recovery from strokes, music therapy and recovery from or improvement in dementia. But there should be more. The problem is that. The problem with the studies are that you have to have money to do it.
Yeah.
And there are two sources of funding. You have your government and non-for-profit organization funding, and you have medical industry. Medical industry, particularly pharma, is not going to fund something that's not going to benefit them financially.
Right. Right. Yeah. They don't want to find out that if you learn how to play piano,
need that drug.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I get it. You know,
yeah.
But isn't that interesting though? It almost opens up the thought process. Like, you know, why isn't Yamaha or Steinway or somebody like that, some company like that, saying, let's start doing some studies. Let's figure out a way to do some studies, because this, in the long run, is going to help us sell way more products if we can come back with a study and say, if your child starts performing or playing piano at the age of 8, or this or that, or however, you know, I mean, it just seems like, I understand the fact that it takes millions and millions of dollars to do a study, but I mean, boy, that would be something for people to start really specifically looking at and investing money in.
Absolutely.
It looks like in the long run, that could be a huge win for music in general, but also any company that got involved with it.
Yeah, definitely. And the government funding, because of, you know, limitations, there's so many organizations and et cetera that apply for funding. NIH tends to fund mostly what they call mechanistic studies, like studies to find out at the molecular level what's the cause of the illness, rather than, you know, let's do music. And so that leaves us with the extramural, the non-for-profit organizations, which are endowments from somebody wealthy and et cetera.
Yeah.
And those, they're limited, so... If you can find somebody who whose parents had dementia and they think that music would have helped them, then they'll give you the money and so forth.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. I encourage everybody to go read the article because, I mean, it was really well done, as you normally do. But it was really fascinating. And the way you related it back to, I just find that whole music therapy and the way it affects people with different disabilities, it's fascinating to me. And it's stuff that hopefully in the future really gets a lot of research behind it at some point, because I mean, it just seems like such a no-brainer to be able to do that. And plus it helps a lot of people as well. So, you know, I'm glad you brought it
well,
up.
The next two columns are going to be about music therapy.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, good. Because I love talking about it. So you and I will be talking about that again the next time you're on. So the next column with music and the brain will be in for August, right?
Correct. Correct. Okay, and so then the one after that in October, and they both will be about music therapy.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you writing for the magazine, as I always tell you. But, you know, now that you're contributing to this Music in the Brain column, along with reviews, you know, we're lucky to have you. And as always,
I love talking
to you. And I'm glad we made this Skype work today. So I'll let you get back to your patio. I can see you relaxing and chilling out and enjoying the weather.
Yes.
You get a little break from the hospital, huh?
Yes. Today I have a little break.
Good deal. All right.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Atarian, I appreciate you being on.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Harar.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Harar is just a genius, and very happy to have him on the show. Very happy to have him covering this for Chicago Jazz Magazine. And he's a huge music supporter. And, you know, it's a great column. So I encourage everybody to go check it out. ChicagoJazzMagazine.com, right there on the homepage. Click on it. The CD reviews are there. And again, so is the Music in the Brain column. Now, tomorrow, Ryan Cohen, the pianist, Ryan Cohen is going to be here joining us. We're going to be talking all about what he is up to. He's got new projects happening all the time, so this is going to be exciting. We always like having Ryan on. We actually did a feature interview with Ryan about a year and a half ago for Chicago Jazz Magazine. So speaking of Chicago Jazz Magazine, you can flip over to that and check that out. They're all up. They're all up online. Everything's archived, and it's also on podcast as well, so ChicagoJazzMagazine.com. On Thursday, Thaddeus Tukes. We're going to be doing a listening party on here. He's going to be talking about his new recording that's coming out. And we're going to be talking to the young vibist who has been performing all over the country. Obviously, everybody in Chicago probably knows Thaddeus. So that's going to be fun. A special listening party here, 6 p.m. on Thursday. And then on Friday, Dave Katzman's back, and we're going to be doing blues, Chicago Blues and Beyond. And our special guest, Dave and I will co-host that day, is Joanna Connor. So Joanna Connors is going to be on. She is still doing a lot of live streaming. She's always working, no matter if we're in a pandemic or not. So it's going to be fun talking to her on Friday. Again, everything is happening here at 6 p.m. And as I always tell everyone, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Like us, share us, leave us a comment, somebody we should cover, send us a DM. If you like what you're hearing, call a friend, call a neighbor. Call the grandkids right here tomorrow, 6 p.m. Chicago Music Revealed. Until that time, I will see you then.